pinnacle of network automation is to propagate incorrect AAA configuration to all of your network at once using concurrency and observe how you lose management access to all remote sites in real time. It might be even so fast that you don't even have enough time to update your CV before it finishes. This is episode 12 of Network Automation Hangout, discussion about network automation with the community. I'm your host, Dmitry Figel, and I haven't done that yet. I haven't disconnected all of my remote sites, but I think it will be in the future of my career, I guess.
I'm John. I'm IPv0 on Twitter. I work for CBT Nuggets, and I make training videos.
And I'm Carl, and Carl Montanari on Twitter, and I don't know what I do, but I think we need more concise jokes, Dimitri.
Yeah, that was verbose. That was like VVV.
Well, if you folks were contributing some jokes, maybe we would have concise jokes on the show, but until I have to do all the work for you, that's what you get.
Well, that's how we like it, so I don't see that changing, so we'll deal with it.
Yep.
All right. And also, Roman Dodin is not with us today, but I would like to mention that today, just a couple of hours ago, he was doing an amazing presentation on NLNOC on in-person conference, which was broadcasted live on YouTube. And I think we were all watching it, and it was pretty amazing. I really liked it. It's about Container Lab. So if you folks are interested about learning about that tool, even though we already had a hangout about it too, but I would still go ahead and check out the recording of that stream. Yeah, well, let's go around our virtual roundtable and see what you have been up to, folks, starting with you, Carl.
Oh, man. See, more work on Scrapply Go, of course. Some good progress on there. Did like a pretty big overhaul that was kind of much needed since it's just kind of grown a lot. You know how that is, like stuff gets a little crazy. So I had to kind of pull back and clean up some things, and I think it's much better for it. And thanks to Roman for helping out with a lot of that. And then we added the kubectl and Docker exec kind of setup in there. So now Scrapply Go can kind of be used to tickle containers and things like that. So I think we'll talk about that more when Roman's back, but that's probably been the big thing. And then otherwise been slogging through some Illumi stuff and GKE stuff for day job, and so that's been kind of different and nice little adventure.
Sounds good, Carl. What about you, John?
Yeah, I've just been doing a kind of continuation of what I've already been doing, which is like
nothing.
Recording this Python course I've been doing. I've been working on that, and aside from that, that's really been it. I've just been doing that in my spare time and trying to do more things outside of work, going more walks, playing more golf, that type of thing. So pretty boring. What I've been doing the past 4 or 5 weeks, I've just been continuing doing that. So it's nothing new on the radar for now. What about you, Dimitri?
Honestly, not so much on my side. I've been doing some work, I think, from like newer stuff that I started doing a little bit more of Terraform with AWS. I do need to maintain some cloud infrastructure, and I haven't been using a lot of Terraform in the past, so that has been pretty new to me, though I would say generally it's quite straightforward until we have to implement some logic and stuff. I also a little bit struggling with importing existing resources there. So let's say you already have something configured in AWS infrastructure. I don't know, it could be like I have some IPsec tunnels to on-prem, I have some database and stuff like that. I'm still not 100% sure what's the best way to do it via Terraform. It seems like you have to create the configuration for that resource anyway and then like import it. It's kind of like a little bit sluggish, but I'm not sure. I don't have a lot of experience with it to kind of comment on that, but I guess it's something that I will have to deal with. And other than that, not so much. So, Carl, maybe you would like to talk to us about your Pulumi experience, since I've touched on Terraform too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I totally feel the same with the importing stuff into Terraform, or Pulumi for that matter. It's not, in my experience, a super enjoyable adventure. So I definitely feel that feel as well. Yeah, so I've been building out some stuff in Google Cloud, and I used Terraform quite a bit in the past and thought it it might be cool to kind of dip into Pulumi, and I like the idea, and I think maybe we've talked about this a little bit, and I know it's been kind of going around on Twitter and stuff, like this idea of infrastructure as software versus infrastructure as code, and infrastructure as code is just a bunch of config files, and at some point that ends up being, you know, kind of untenable, and you're not necessarily getting the benefits of all of the best practices of, you know, normal software development, where you have tests and you have IDE support and you have, you know, all that kind of like stuff that you're used to. And anyway, so I was needing to build some stuff out, so I figured I would give Pulumi a shot because all of that infrastructure software stuff sounded pretty snazzy. And so for anybody that's like not aware, Pulumi's like AWS CDK, and I think Terraform has a CDK as well. They're all kind of in the same bucket, I guess, where they're generating bindings or an SDK or whatever you want to say in a couple different languages. So Pulumi's like TypeScript, C#, Python, and Go, I think. I'm not sure what the other ones are. I know AWS CDK is Python, but I'm not sure what else. But yeah, it's pretty cool because, you know, instead of writing HCL like in Terraform land, you just write Python or Go or whatever, and you can create objects just pretty much in the same way. And then, you know, you can kind of pass those objects around and access, I don't know, my GKE cluster.name or whatever. And then you can access those attributes of it, and it all kind of handles, you know, deployment and all of that on the back end for you. And it auto builds kind of like the same way that Terraform does, like a graph of like, you know, this is dependent on this and all that kind of thing. So yeah, it's been pretty cool. It's, you know, another kind of thing to learn, but I think if I have to do cloudy type stuff, I think I definitely prefer this over, Terraform. I kind of liken it to maybe like Ansible to Nornier and Terraform to Pulumi or CDK. It's kind of like the same thing where you're in one, you're writing a DSL and, you know, you're doing whatever. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But for me, spending majority of my time in Python and Go, I'd rather write Python or Go than, you know, YAML. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of the cliff notes.
So do I understand correctly that the main reason you're liking it more than Terraform, which is, well, by far the most adopted tool in this area of spinning up cloud infrastructure. And so the main reason for that is you actually want a programming language rather than some kind of DSL where doing some kind of programming flow or programming logic becomes kind of weird, correct?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so like I can iterate over a list of subnets or instances like just normal. And, you know, build like it's just normal Python for loop or whatever, for example. And then, you know, there's also, I haven't gotten this far, unfortunately, because this is like usually my tagline. But they, Pulumi, also provide, it looks like, some pretty snazzy mocks and stuff. So you can kind of mock your code in your tests, and you can basically patch, you know, like the actual deployment mechanism, and then say like, hey, is this object going to look like what I expect it to look like when rendered out and stuff. Like, I don't think there's really any kind of equivalent of that in Terraform land, unless, you know, maybe surely you could write your own provider and do whatever, but I, you know, outside of that, I don't think there's kind of that same kind of thing. And then, you know, like all of like normal linting and stuff is cool, and auto formatting and highlighting and, you know, blah, 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 all that other stuff. So yeah, like super similar to the Ansible Nornier, you know, comparison.
Yeah. And it was kind of weird when considering that, like, I just started with Terraform and I have a needed work. It was weird for me. And I also had these flashbacks to writing Ansible playbooks where you go to the documentation, let's say in Ansible, to some module, right? And you figure out what kind of parameters that Ansible module expects. The same kind of feel was with Terraform. Like, you go and look for documentation of specific provider and what specific options are actually supported there. And you kind of like not have any auto-completion per se. And it's like more or less a guesswork in a way.
Yeah, totally. Like, I could just start, you know, from Pulumi. Like, I'm using their preview Google Native provider, which is cool. So from Pulumi, Google Native dot compute, you know, and then PyCharm's going to do its magic, or VS Code or whatever you use, who cares, is going to, you know, do its magic and show you like what you can import. And then you're like, oh, hey, that sounds useful. It just kind of fits my normal flow. Then I find, you know, like instance, compute instance or something. And then, you know, good old command B, and then you're at the definition, and you can see, you know, all the doc strings and stuff. And it's like the Python bit is all auto-generated, as far as I understand. Like, Pulumi on the back end is Go, And so it auto-generates the Python, you know, bindings or SDK or whatever. And then, but like it puts all the docstring information in there, and you know, you could see like the types that it expects, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So it really kind of keeps you in it, you know, instead of like you say, going out to, you know, oh, okay, well, I got to go look up Terraform AWS provider, and okay, now I got to look for EC2 instance, and you know, blah blah blah.
Okay, the last question before we move to another topic would be around the state. I know that with Terraform, you can store the state locally. You can store it in S3 bucket or something like that. What are the options with Pulumi?
Definitely don't know all the things here, for sure. So I'm using like the free developer plan, kind of like, because I'm kind of, you know, still crash test dummying this kind of thing. And so it's basically Terraform remote state. Out of the box, you don't have to do anything, and it's done in Pulumi Cloud. So you just have to create a, you know, an account with them, or just like sign in with GitHub or whatever. And then, you know, for like team versions, that's like how they monetize, is my understanding. So it'd be like, you know, $5 a month of seed or whatever it is. I don't have any idea. But so it's all done in their cloud. Basically, the state just lives there, and you can, you know, you can dump state out locally and look at it if you want, of course, and you can edit it, and you can, you know, do all the same stuff that you can do in Terraform. But yeah, so it's just done in their thing. And I was looking into it briefly, but I hadn't gotten too far. You can do like full unlimited stuff if you host your own backend or state thing, whatever. So it does look like you can totally use, like even you could use open source stuff without paying at scale if you ran your own, like their version of Pulumi Cloud, whatever like the open source flavor is. So it looks like, you know, you got options. And like just for me, for the little stuff that I've been doing, like having it just auto magic has been pretty slick. So that's been cool.
Yeah, I can imagine. Probably I should start exploring that too, especially considering that I'm at the beginning of my cloud journey. So
yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, obviously since you're living in Python all the time, it just makes a lot of sense, and you don't have to context switch as much. Or yeah, I'm digging it.
All right. Joining us right now is Tupsin. Hello, Tupsin. Would you like to talk about your project?
Hey, evening. Yeah, I got a little project going on that I thought I'd mention. You know, might give Dimitri a little spring in his step. So I've got some automations that I've got written in Python, and they get done and it happens. But the wider operations group, if you will, has decided that they want to start doing some automation more across the board. So covering SAN and the servers and all sorts of stuff. So they've set up an Ansible stack as a proof of concept to investigate this. And the server guys love it, you know, they can push out their patches and, you know, every month, and they can push out antivirus updates and whatever it is that they need to do. Unfortunately, that means that I've got to take some of my Python scripts and turn them into Ansible playbooks. I knew that would just please Dimitri to no end.
So what was the driver for Ansible in the first place? Just like here nor there, whether you want to do that or not, but just like as a business, the other teams were like, hey, we got Tower or something. And so it just kind of started happening. Is that kind of the take?
No, it's not even that. They don't even have Tower. They're running it off of, it's Ansible core, but it's got a web interface with it called Rundeck, which is a new one.
Yeah.
But the driver behind it across for the wider group is budgetary. You know, the higher ups are looking at reports of tasks that get done and saying, well, how can we reduce the amount of time that people are spending on these? We want to save some money. Let's automate. What can we automate with? Ooh, Ansible.
Yeah, that's fair. So I haven't done anything with Rundeck in many years at this point, but my recollection, and I think this is true, is it doesn't really care. It's kind of stack stormy, if maybe that's more familiar. It's just like a platform to run stuff from. So like, is there any chance you can like stick to the Python stuff if you, because like it doesn't, you Rundeck doesn't care if it's Ansible. So you could put a job in Rundeck, like same as you could put a job in Jenkins or whatever. And like, then if you want to keep Python, maybe that's an option. I don't know. Just not, and not saying not to do Ansible, that's fine. But
I think at the moment we're being funneled to Ansible, because that's what they've set up, and that's what they want to use for their proof of concept. You know, as happens in large companies, sometimes you just have to play the political game. and just toe the line, you know.
Definitely understand. Had you done Ansible for network stuff prior to this adventure, or is this your first foray into that side of things?
Oh yeah, I've done a bit of Ansible on networks. I've got heavily into it on F5s. It does work quite nicely on F5s, but for general networks, I did it, and then I sort of moved on from it into more bespoke Python scripts. But this project is starting up just now, and they're back at that stage of let's do Ansible. So yeah, it's got a.
That's quite sad, but at the same time, I'm just happy that I'm not the one who needs to write Ansible playbook. So as long as I can avoid doing that, then I'm happy. What do you feel about it, Upsin? What are your thoughts on that? And what kind of actual things you were doing with Python scripts that you will have to convert?
Well, they don't know everything that I do with Python scripts. So I'm just going to give them some of the easier stuff, like the monthly change of fallback credentials across switches. That should be straightforward enough to do in a playbook. You know, just be a couple of tasks and an inventory. So, I'll give them a few of the simpler tasks. But when it comes to the more complex stuff, I'm gonna just keep those off to the side and carry on with Python, I think.
So there is one who was tasked to do this conversion, or what would be your participation or involvement in this?
So what I've been asked for is ideas, but I don't doubt that once an idea is given, I'll then be told, okay, make it work.
I see.
Good ideas are always punished.
Well, I guess it depends on where you work and stuff. So what are your feelings about it? Do you feel like it will not be that bad to convert some of the stuff to Ansible, or you would prefer to keep Python stuff? I don't know.
I think the approach I'm taking is that some of the simpler stuff, like that password change, I think that's six of one, half dozen of the other between Ansible and Python. It's not that tricky. You know, it's not that difficult a task to do in either. You know, in Python, you're just sending the command. In Ansible, you're just using a task that's defined. Sorry, pardon me. That's predefined to do the password changes on NXOS or iOS or whatever your platform is. So I think some of the tasks, as I say, it doesn't matter whether they're done Ansible or Python. Other tasks I would not want to do in Python in Ansible because of the requirement there for logic in the operation. And whilst it can be done in Ansible, as I think we all know, it's a bit tricky to build logic into an Ansible playbook.
Yeah, makes sense. And who do you think will be supporting those Ansible playbooks? So who would be, especially since we are a network automation hangout, especially the network automation part, who would be, let's say, once they're written, once they're operational, will it be you or it will be wider team of engineers supporting that?
I think it'll be me or other elements of the network group, of the network teams that are capable of doing it. There may be some. There's another concept I have vaguely going on for allowing, say, the server teams to update a YAML file that defines which interfaces in the data center are connected to hypervisors and what VLANs need to be trunked out to those hypervisors. And, we could use GitLab's built-in approval mechanisms so they can, they can make a pull request or merge request, and that can then be approved by somebody that can look at it and think it through and make sure that they're not going to just destroy things. So that might be useful down the line. I think for now, I'm just going to give them the simple stuff, play the political game and see where it goes.
All right.
If you have pretty simple tasks, D-Bot will go mental here, but I think if the tasks are pretty simple, there's no real major obstacle using Ansible, in my opinion. I really don't think so. It's when the tasks get a little bit more complex, it starts becoming a headache fast. But if you're just doing pretty simple tasks, just at scale, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world at all. I mean, it may not be ideal, certainly not, but sometimes you just have to play politics. If your team needs this particular tool for whatever reason, it's been decided and the option is not yours to change it, you just have to roll with the punches sometimes. And like I say, if the task isn't really complex, I think you can get away with it.
Well, yeah. Let me just kick you, John, from this hangout. This will be your punishment.
Am I getting the ban hammer?
Absolutely, yes. Until the next episode.
He's off the hook.
Dare you say things like this, John? To be fair, I'm just thinking, if someone were to come to me and say, okay, you have this Python stuff and we need you to convert to Ansible, I'm thinking of like, what would be my plan of action? Because I would not want to do that.
Would that be where you make your automation disconnect all your remote sites and start writing the CV update?
Maybe. I would probably start the war, or as many wars as I have to get it my way, I guess. And if I see that this is a lost cause, I would probably have to be honest, look for another job. But this is just my point of view. Like, I did maintain some Ansible playbooks, and I really don't want to end up doing that ever again. So, but that's me.
But here's the thing, though, Dimitri. See, even if that's what you would like to happen, let's say you're more senior, you have a lot of influence, but if the team around you only know Ansible, what would you do in that sense? Is that a question whereby you say, oh, look, I'll just move job, or do you try to play ball and find a way to work around it? Because otherwise, if it's only you that understands the automation system, it's only you that can troubleshoot it. You'll be the one that's on call all the time, effectively, because you're the only one that can fix it. If all the team around you only know one particular tool, or do you take the hit and say, well, do you know what? This is not optimal, but this is the best solution all around, given the circumstances.
I don't know, man. To be honest, I think I would just spend time on upskilling the team instead of going down the path of choosing an inferior solution, at least. That's what I believe.
Yeah, sorry, I'm like emphatically in agreement, Dimitri, because I've had this talk a lot too with people, and it's like, well, you didn't know Ansible before, so why couldn't you learn this other thing? It's like, I don't know why, but we all, like a lot of companies or people in IT seem to be like, oh, well, this is what we know. And it's like, well, yeah, but you didn't know that before you knew it. So it's like, you could totally learn another thing. That's like part of the whole IT thing, is like, you're never going to be able to stop learning, or else you'll, I don't know, be punching down 66 blocks or something for the rest of your life, I guess. I don't know.
Even out with automation, that's true. If you have to learn general networking technology, you're always going to have to just accept that you can't hold on to knowledge for 10 years and hope it's just always going to be accurate. You're going to have to maybe be a bit adaptive. So if that is the case, it probably is a good shout to just say, listen, if you can learn Ansible, you know, have that same type of ambition to learn a better tool, maybe.
I think, what about when you have a situation where you have a diverse range of technologies? And perhaps they don't all lend themselves to Python. We're looking at managing servers as well, deploying patches, doing whatever it is that server people do. You know, that's not my thing. But for them, Ansible is the right tool, potentially. And the goal there then is to use the same tool across the board. So I think in this situation for me, I am going to have to just accept that I'm going to have to use Ansible a little bit. You know, make the token gestures to using it to maintain a happy boss.
Totally, I totally get it, and I've been there and feel it. But it just blows my mind. It's like a hammer is pretty good at hammering a nail, but it's pretty shit at unbolting a bolt. You know, and it's like, I don't know. Like, I get, you know, that it can be made to work, or you know, Ansible can be made to work for network thing. But if you've already got a wrench, like, I don't know. It just seems crazy to me, but I live in a fantasy world, obviously. So I totally get what you're saying, and feel like it's real life, and I'm going to go ride my unicorn off to my fantasy island.
Well, I heard this argument from some other people too, exactly the same argument regarding, we're already managing servers by Ansible. Why can't we manage everything else with Ansible? And I kind of get it from one perspective, and from another perspective, I don't, because managing servers and managing network devices is just completely different beast altogether. It's usually done by different people. So to be honest, I'm not 100% sure why it's such a big deal that like one team doing one thing is using one tool that seemed like a better tool for a job, and then another team is using something else to to get their job done, but maybe I'm also living some fantasy world of unicorns as you, Carl.
Yeah, I think like a missing component here is like having a good CI platform where if team A is doing Ansible, team B is doing Salt, whatever, I don't know, team C is using Python or team D is using Perl. Who cares? Like as long as they codify their jobs in a usable thing, which pick on Jenkins or whatever. And then if anybody can run the job because it's in behind Jenkins or Rundeck, like then does it really matter at the end of the day? You know, certainly like, yeah, you don't want to have 5 trillion tools because that would be ridiculous. But being like, we have to have one just seems crazy to me. But I get it. I get the realities. It's just, you know, I'll get back on my unicorn, I guess.
I think having a holistic solution whereby one tool fits all sounds nice. It sounds like a great thing. But typically you have specialist tools for a reason. You know, they do a particular job very well. I think if you can build it into your architecture such that you can have all of these different tools specializing and maximizing efficiency, and like Carl says, you can have it in such a way whereby it's not going to be really clunky and disjointed, whereby there still is a smooth workflow, I think that's a perfectly reasonable solution. I think that's probably the more optimal solution rather than just hoping for the unicorn. I've got this one tool that does everything optimally and it's just great. I think that's really hard to find. I don't know of a tool that does that.
And I've been thinking a lot about lately, like 80-20 or whatever. And it's like you get a tool that, and then you use 20% of it, but you're paying for 100% of it, or you're not paying. Maybe you're paying like in just like energy, like human cost instead of like capital, but whatever. Like let's say Ansible, then you use 20% of it, but you're dealing with 80% of the other bugs and issues and stuff that you don't care about. And it's like, well, if you can just have custom tools that are doing only what you need and nothing more, to me that seems like the place to be if you can get there. I mean, I know it's easier said than done.
That does make sense to me. That seems to be like it's a more lean solution, less clutter, less junk that you don't need. If you can optimize that and do that correctly, that's what I would actually go for if I had the option. I mean, realistically, like I say, if you can get this one holistic tool that does absolutely everything, good on you. But finding that, I just don't know of a way to do so.
Yeah, go real minimalist, give everything Swedish names. It'll be like IKEA, but just for applications. I don't know, it'll be great.
So since we brought up this topic, I remember that we had a comment in some of the chats that I would like to read out loud and hear your thoughts on the topic. So the comment was, it's hard to convince an organization to rely on custom Python scripts. My people really need a vendor-provided solution. Ansible wins against Narnia in that case, sadly. So, Carl, what do you think about this?
I think the first thing that I always think about is like, what does Red Hat give you that you need? In my experience, and like this is my myopic viewpoint, like Red Hat is really happy to support RHEL and Tower, but less happy or less capable maybe to support, you know, your custom giant, you know, roles or playbooks or whatever to do network stuff. Cause they're like, yo, we sold you Tower and we're going to support you for like Ansible things, but you're doing all sorts of weird stuff with, you know, community modules or custom filters or whatever. And so I guess I just wonder, like, I question the usefulness of that support and like the cost that it comes at. So to me, like, what do you really need support? And at the end of the day, it feels to me, all of these organizations that say stuff like this really just want somebody to blame. And like, I guess I get it, but to me that just feels like a really shitty way to live. You know what I mean? Like, what? Why can't you just like get the tool and be accountable and like figure it out? And like, shit breaks. That's the kind of the nature of things. And like, enable your people to be in a place to figure it out and sort it out and, you know, adapt and whatever. And I think that's good. But so yeah, I don't know, the whole support thing. Especially like with hardware, it makes sense, right? Because you got a RMA thing and, you know, like whatever, power supply dies, cool. But when we're just in strictly software land, it makes less sense to me, especially when you're mostly going to be like operating outside of that software's core kind of thing, right? Power's probably not going to break that much, so you probably don't need to call support for that. But your playbook might break, but that's really mostly on you already. So I don't know. Maybe I'll get back on my unicorn.
Yeah, I'm not sure that if you, let's say, buy support from Ansible, and folks, I'm not 100% sure I'm saying the truth right now, so that's a disclaimer, so you don't necessarily have to trust what I'm about to say right now, but if you are buying vendor support from, let's say, Red Hat, I'm not 100% sure that you will get any support you want with that. So as Carl said, let's say you're using some kind of community-based modules for the platforms that you have, and I know they don't do idempotency or don't do idempotency fully in for some features, and I am not really sure Red Hat will be fixing that. So if you are buying vendor support, and as far as I understand, it's really a lot of money, you have to be very clear on what kind of support are you exactly getting, what falls under that and what doesn't, because you may end up having bought this expensive contract, but then for the issues that you have, or for the issues that are the most common, you can't use it. But I don't know, maybe if someone had an experience with this firsthand, can correct me if this is information is wrong.
See, when I hear a question like this, I can understand what the person is meaning. I can understand the point of view of the business who do want support. But on the other side, it always reads to me like a real damning lack of faith in the actual team. I don't know, like, to me, if you're paying people to be a network automation engineer, it feels like you should be able to competently put together simple Python scripts with some decent testing to make sure it's going to actually work the way it should. If you can't do that, why are you even implementing automation? I feel like it's almost a bit, I don't know. If the team can't do that, I don't know how much a bit of red hat support is going to help you, to be honest.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like, yeah, it feels like a bad life outlook. Wow, we need support because we need somebody to blame and our people suck. Well, okay, maybe like enable your people and have some accountability. I don't know. Like, I get, you know, there's externalities and there's maybe legal reasons and blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. But I don't know. Maybe I'll just get out of my drum circle. This time it's a drum circle, my hippie drum circle with open source and all that.
And zero dependencies. Yes, Carl?
Zero depths.
Yes.
Zero depth life.
Yeah, and going back to something that John said, well, not everyone really is hiring network automation engineers right now. I'm still seeing every so often those positions of, oh, we need a network engineer with Python knowledge. And then it's like a list of, like, I don't know, 9 bullet points, or I don't know, 6 bullet points. It's about, like, I don't know, OSPF and MPLS and BGP and all that kind of networking stuff. And then, oh, and we also need you to write different automation. So I really hope that that will change eventually. I see some of these changes already in some of the companies, but it's still, I would say, not as widespread as I would like. Like, I still see that unicorn, well, searching for unicorn who does everything, which is really not realistic, but I don't know. What do you guys think about it?
Totally agree with what you said. It's, I think having this idea of the unicorn who does everything is probably not a good idea to begin with. But I do think if you're going to implement automation, you need to have a strong team. Like, you've got to actually pay the money to have people who are competent. And again, I just don't see how the crucial modifier is going to be a bit of Red Hat support. Now we can do automation because we can get Red Hat support. This is the only way we're only going to implement it this way. So we've got to use this particular tool and limit everything else. So at least we have someone to blame and we've got a bit of support. To me, it just seems, I don't know. When I read stuff like that, I just feel a bit sad. I just think, give your team a chance, get a good team, make sure testing's done well, and let them choose the tools they need.
And really give them the space to do it, you know? And like, I don't know. That seems lacking too. Like, the space and time, got to go slower to go fast. There we go. That's my finishing line today.
I mean, that's a nice line.
I like cliches, you know?
Yes, you do. It's weird that some expect, like, even if you have that person who knows everything, let's say networking and, I don't know, has good programming skills, like, how do you expect them to work on that automation if they, like, 90% of their work, they have to deal with networking problems and, like, solve tickets and troubleshoot network and stuff like that? Because writing network automation software or applications is really a full-time job. So, yeah, it would be nice to have space and time to actually work on it. Tupsin, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have anything else to share or to add?
No. Oh, thanks, guys, for the input, and have a great day.
Thank you, Tupsin. All right, John, I will just put you on the spot since we don't have anyone joining us right now, and you will have to share something interesting. Maybe you could share about something that you were supposed to share last time,
Give him the good old Uno reverse card. How's that inventory working, Dimitri?
Carol, that is exactly what I was going to say.
I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
Tell me how it's going and tell me what is the rough timeline. I remember about a week or two ago you were saying, I'm getting it done today, and I still have not the chance to actually play with this inventory, so you tell me.
Well, the good thing is that I never publicly admitted that I am going to do it on that day. So whatever was in private,
I'll be getting posted tonight.
Whatever is in private conversation doesn't count, John. So, but I remember very clearly that last time I interrupted you with something that you wanted to talk about, and then you never finished doing that.
All with Container Lab. Oh yeah. Well, do you know what? Roman's coming on next week. Let's have a talk with him next week about that, because he knows most about it, and I feel like we can get some good mileage out of that. I think that'd be a good actual topic to get into with him, rather than just try to tack it on at the very end here.
Okay. You just don't want to take any responsibility, I see.
None. Zero. Nada. That's why they call me IPv0. IPv0 responsibility.
I love it.
Zero content, zero responsibility. That's John. You can go follow him on Twitter at IPv0.
Put a bow on it, man.
Yep. I'm going to get dinner, man.
You folks are lazy. You want those 5 minutes of the time more for your
Carol,
dinner.
Just remember, that's the man who's saying this is still not created his inventory, so just remember, we're being called lazy, just remember that.
Yeah, I'm internalizing that and thinking a lot about it, Dimitri.
Well, you will have to suffer and have more sleepless nights until I get it done, so I have zero regrets. Hey, Alex.
Hi. Hi, guys. If you have any tips, suggestions, recommendations for a seasoned senior network engineer, but in the traditional, old-fashioned way to run networks, to get into the first steps for network automation, with all the knowledge you now have about this subject, what would be your suggestions to start in this realm?
Thank you for your question, Alex. John, let's start with you. I heard you were instructor in some training provider, so maybe you have some ideas.
In the coming weeks, I should have a course out on CBT Nuggets, which is really about doing very basic Python. So I think that's always a good entry point if this is the transition you want to make, because Python is just like, it's ubiquitous, it's absolutely everywhere. So I always think that's a good way to understand, is to know a bit of Python, understand how to work with some data structures, you know, like YAML, you're going to see a lot, JSON, learning things like that. There's a really good resource, if you want a free resource, I think it's Natasha Samoylenko, I think her name is. She's got a really good Python for Network Engineers book, which is free, and you can download. I think that's a great resource to get started. Anyone can get it, and I think the exercises, and if you walk through that, I think that's a good first stepping stone, at least, to get you up to speed on Python. But again, there's so many different ways you can take it. Like, it's almost like a never-ending hole. Some people want to go really far, the way Carol has, and you start developing your own things. You can go really hard into that. It really does depend how far you want to take it, but for a basic introduction, I think learning the basics of Python is a really good first step, at least. So I would certainly recommend that.
Carl, do you have any suggestions?
I think that was a good summary. Natasha's stuff is super cool, so definitely times two for that.
Yeah, I agree. So Natasha's book, Python for Network Engineers, is the number one resource I usually recommend to people starting this journey. It's free book, but it also comes with exercises and solutions for them, so that's usually a good place to start. I really like John's course. I already forgot how it's called. Advanced Network Automation, I think, or something like that. But you probably need some basic Python knowledge first to tackle that course.
Yeah, a little bit of Python knowledge, and I suppose it's a bit of a middle ground, because if you're totally new to networking, it won't make sense, because I assume you know things about like VXLAN and MPLS and stuff like that, and I assume you know a little bit about network automation. So it's a little bit of a middle ground. Like, I would probably make sure you're past your CCNA and know a little bit about Python for doing that, but you don't need to know too much at all to get into that one.
I also like any kind of learning resources for DevNet Associate exams. Not necessarily do the exam, but like do resources for the exam. So there are like courses from DevNet, there are some books and stuff like that will give you some overview of different tools and techniques that exist. So you'll learn about what API is or what NetCon RESTCon is. Like understanding some stuff like that could be very helpful too. And then probably I would go with trying different libraries that were mentioned numerous times on this audio show, like Scraply, Nornier, and tools like that. And they have a pretty good docs. So it's like once you have some basic Python knowledge, you can start copy-pasting examples to make them work. So that would be a nice way. And also, this is usually the question I receive a lot, like how do I start with network automation? And I committed to writing about it. So probably, well, I don't know when, probably within September, there will be a blog post on that with some more specific suggestions. Well, I hope we answered your question, Alex. Thank you for asking it.
Yes, thank you.
Some final wisdom. Let's start with you, John.
Final wisdom is I'm stealing Carol's stuff again. I'm going to say test, test, test. Because then if you do, you don't need to rely on Red Hat support so much, okay? So test, test, test.
I love it. I support it.
I guess for me, like no Ansible for a better life, I think. All right. This has been another episode of Network Automation Hangout, audio discussion about network automation with the community. We are recording bi-weekly on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Central European Time, 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Join us to talk about network automation. Thank you so much, and until the next time, goodbye.